Thanks very much for joining me. I'm Bob Franklin. On this edition of Like It Is, a portrait of the late Tim Gallego, a journalist and publisher. He founded the Lakota Times with Doris Gallego at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, where he was born and grew up.
Today, my guest is Tim Gallego, editor and publisher of the Lakota Times, the largest privately owned Indian weekly newspaper in the United States. Tim joins me via telephone from Rapid City, South Dakota. Now, Tim, you've mentioned in speeches that you've been physically attacked as a result of some of your editorials against Native Americans. Your thoughts?
Oh, you know, I'm going back 12 years, a time when there was a lot of tension and a lot of racial misunderstandings in South Dakota. We certainly coming off of the occupation at Wounded Knee, and there was a lot of friction between Indians and whites, and there was just a lot of anger in this state. There was a lot of hatred, a lot of anger. It's taken us all of these years, 19 years now, to really start healing the wounds between not only the Indians against whites, but also from the different factions within the Indian community itself that were at odds with each other. We just happened to be caught in the middle. We were a newspaper that was trying to take an objective, middle-of-the-road point of view. And we were new. There had never been a newspaper like ours, not only on the reservation, but in South Dakota. I mean, we were an independent newspaper that had the freedom to either praise or criticize, to do investigative stories. So a lot of the things we were doing was new to the Indian community also. So it's been an educational process for us in our 12 years in business, not only to educate the Indian community about what freedom of the press is all about, but also to educate the non-Indian community that we do have a voice.
Let's get to why you started the Lakota Times and who are some of your supporters.
Well, I started the paper primarily because I, after many years in this business, and I've been in this communications field for more than 20 years in television, radio, and in the newspaper business. I mean, behind the camera, in front of the camera as a host of a television show for 2 years back in the 70s. Did a radio show three days a week, and I also was a journalist working for daily newspapers non-Indian newspapers. So, I mean, I've run the gamut in this business as far as what the field of communications. And in every field I've been in, there has always been a total lack of information about the Indian people. I'm talking about from my area out here primarily. And many, many times I've seen stories come on the AP wire that were erroneous, that were stereotypical, and they were just taken off the wire and waxed and pasted up, going into the local newspapers or read over the air. And without those people responsible for the news reporting doing any effort to determine whether these were factual things or not. And so what I saw happening then was erroneous and stereotypical stories were being reproduced on radio, television, and in the newspapers, and reinforcing the racial attitudes towards Indian people simply because they were reading it, taking it as truthful, as gospel, simply because they saw it in the local media. And after many years of this, I became very bothered by it, and I thought, well, I think the only way that we're going to be able to talk about things important to us in Indian country is to have our own news vehicle. We're going to have to do it ourselves. And, that's my philosophy throughout everything we're doing in Indian country. I think of the Mahatma Gandhi when he finally told his white supporters in India that you're my friends, I care about you, but now you're going to have to step back and we're going to have to do it ourselves. That's what's happening in Indian country right now, and that's why I started a newspaper. The things that are important to us, we understand because we were born with it, we were raised with it. No one else can get inside of our hearts and our heads and feel the things we feel because we're a part of the land. We're a part of the nature. We're a part of our own world. And so this is the way we started the newspaper. We started because we knew it's something we had to do ourselves.
So you're a strong advocate of self-help.
I'm a strong advocate of sovereignty. I believe Indian nations are sovereign nations. They were sovereign nations long before 1492. We've always had our own forms of government. We've always stood apart. We've never wanted to be a part of the mainstream. We've never wanted to be assimilated into the great melting pot. We've retained our own language. We've retained our own culture. We've retained our own spirituality. But that doesn't make us un-American, nor does it make us bad. It only makes us independent and different.
Tim, stereotypes and Native Americans, how does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me feel that it's got to be changed. I have a very hard time dealing with what I see on television. I see programs being shown on the children's channel, like F Troop, which is so racist in its depiction of Indian people, and yet it's being taught to a whole new generation of white and black kids that are growing up seeing Indians through the eyes of the idiots that put this show together. I see a lot of the old John Wayne movies still being reproduced on WTBS and on Turner's network and other 24-hour stations that carry all the old movies. Well, what is happening then? We have a whole new generation of kids growing up that are seeing these stereotypical racist-type movies and are forming their opinions of American Indians today from what they're seeing, because this is today for them. They're watching things that they believe are current, that are up to date. And we don't, you know, as Indian people, we really don't have the political or the numerical clout to get a lot of things done with the networks or with the independent television stations that are reproducing these absolutely horrendous movies. Now, the black community fought very hard over the years to get some of this really racist, stereotypical movies about blacks off the air. I mean, it's seldom, if ever, you're going to see the old, what they used to call the old step and fetch it type of characters, the shuffling, slow-talking black man who is extremely subservient. You're not going to see those anymore because so many of the black people fought to get these things off the air because they felt exactly the way I just talked about it, that it was creating a whole new generation of people who started to view blacks as that particular character, that particular stereotypical character. And Indian people are being portrayed in a Hollywood fashion that is strictly Hollywood. It's not us. It never has been. It comes from the minds of the script writers in Hollywood.
Do you sense a coming together of African Americans, Native Americans, and other minorities forming groups to pressure movie makers in Hollywood who produce these negative stereotypes?
For the most part, it's been us carrying our own, the Indian people fighting on our own. And I think it's just been recently when, I guess probably 15 years ago, I started to write columns about the mascot issue, about using Indians as mascot, about teams like the Washington Redskins that named the football team after the color of a people's skin. And for the most part, the white community just could not get it through their thick heads. Why are we upset because there's a team named after the color of our skin? And, you know, it's very lengthy. I've been writing about it for a long time, and it's nothing new. And it wasn't until the Atlanta Braves went to the World Series and did their infamous tomahawk chop, when they put turkey feathers in their hair and painted their faces and made absolute fools of themselves in the stands, trying to emulate what they think an Indian to be, desecrating a lot of our religious objects in the process, that I had a chance to get it on a national forum. I did articles for USA Today, and I've done articles for the Christian Science Monitor and other major newspapers explaining. I did an article for Newsweek magazine, and some of the racist and hate mail I got was overwhelming. But it's only when these things really started to happen that I finally started to have communications with black journalists, simply because the black journalists have been fighting for a long time to get a place at the table. We have columnists like Barbara Reynolds. We have people like Richard Prince. We have people like Bob Maynard. And we have one outstanding black man named William Hilliard, who happens to be a good friend of mine, who's the editor of the Oregonian newspaper up in Portland. And Bill saw my point of view. Now, he looked at it, he read one of my columns, and he said, you know, Tim's right. How would I feel if they named the team the Washington Blackskins, and all of the fans jumped up there and put on African wigs and painted their faces black and tried to do what they thought to be a cheap imitation of black people? He said, I would be furious, and I don't blame the Indian people for being upset. So as editor of a major daily with primarily white readership. He changed the paper's policy so it does not use racist names to depict sports teams. Seattle Times followed suit. There's a radio station in Washington, D.C. followed suit. These were brought about primarily because of people like Richard Prince and people like Barbara Reynolds with USA Today got behind me. They've called me. They said, Tim, we're going to support you on this. You know, I'd like to see some other columnists like William Raspberry and Dwayne Wickham. They've got powerful voices. They've got syndicated columns. They, of all people, should understand how we feel, and this is the way we're going to change things, because we have to start doing it through the media. It's not happening in any other fashion.
There were protests at the Super Bowl as well as at the World Series. It appears still that the stereotypes may be winning. What impact do you feel the protest had?
It was after these protests that all of the things that happened with the Oregonian, the Seattle Times, radio stations and things, these are the times, this, after the protest, that did start to happen. So it did have an impact for those people who are sensitive enough to understand that Indian people are human beings, they're not mascots. But that's such a hard thing to get through the minds of sports fans. They can't seem to envision why we would be insulted to be used as a mascot. They can go out and find an assimilated Indian that says, well, I don't mind. I mean, I'm talking about an Indian that's been raised in Chicago or New York City that has no ties to his cultural roots to stand up there as an example of why he doesn't feel or she doesn't feel that it's stereotypical. I mean, you can find a dozen of those, just like in the black community. You can always find someone that's going to stand up and say, I don't see anything wrong or racist about what happened in Los Angeles during the riot. I mean, you can always find people that are going to do that. And the white media has a tendency to use these people as their shining example that it's not wrong to use us as mascots. They don't come out here where the Indian people are, who have maintained their cultural ties, maintained their language and their spirituality, and ask us, because we'll tell them a different story.
Out there is Rapid City, South Dakota. I'm speaking with Tim Gallego, editor and publisher of the Lakota Times, the largest privately owned Indian weekly newspaper in the United States. Tim, you mentioned earlier Wounded Knee. Let's talk about the myth or the legend. Let's re-educate those in the audience who may not be familiar with Wounded Knee from your perspective, I should say.
Wounded Knee in 1973 has been glamorized and really Hollywoodized to the people who live there. You know, I was born and raised at Pine Ridge. And I grew up at Wounded Knee. I lived at Wounded Knee. My dad worked at the trading post there at Wounded Knee as a butcher in the grocery store. My dad was fluent in Lakota, knew our language, the old-fashioned Lakota that you hardly hear spoken anymore. I mean, we speak our language out here, but it's been it has a lot of American words and other words mixed in with it now, so it's really been sort of thinned down from the ancient traditional Lakota. But in 1973, a group of Indian people came onto the reservation, and I say came onto the reservation because the majority of those people that occupied Wounded Knee were not even from our reservation. They were people primarily what we call urban Indians from the Minneapolis area, and occupied the trading post at Wounded Knee and eventually took over the community of Wounded Knee. And using a variety of reasons why they came, the tribal government was corrupt and, you know, all sorts of reasons. The media, the mainstream white press, didn't bother to come in and find out that if the government was corrupt, there's a simple way to change it, and that's at the ballot box. We have democratically held elections on the Pine Ridge Reservation. The power structure is in place because the people voted that power structure into place. There didn't have to be a violent confrontation or a takeover of town to change the political structure of the Pine Ridge Reservation. An election could have taken care of that. So as a result of this, what I consider to be an illegal occupation of lands on a sovereign nation, that the elected tribal government, which is also the law enforcement arm, the judiciary of the Pine Ridge Reservation, had to stand up and protect its lands and its people. And they've been, the legally elected governing body of the Pine Ridge Reservation has been portrayed as goons, as killers, and everything else in some of the latest movies coming out, like Thunderheart, An Incident at Oglala by Robert Redford. Robert Redford's never set foot on our reservation, and yet when he did An Incident at Oglala, he did a 100% one-sided version of what happened on that reservation in, as regards Leonard Peltier, who's serving time in Leavenworth Prison right now for the murder of two FBI agents. He never set one foot on our reservation to talk to a lot of the people who look at it from a different point of view. You know, maybe Leonard Peltier is a big hero to everybody in the eastern part of the United States. On our reservation, he's not that big a hero. He was really responsible for the death of two FBI agents. So this is what happens then when the media comes in and wants to glamorize a situation when there are some very basic reasons that these things happened. There are some very basic explanations for everything, but they aren't romantic enough to catch the public's eye.
Tim, one of the problems the media has put forth is the high rate of alcoholism among Native Americans. What can be done to get a handle on this problem?
We do have a handle on it. Once we started to put together our own programs to handle our own internal problems with our own traditional and our own customs, it's changing. Our reservation has changed 100% in the last 5 years, but the media is not out here to cover that. It's so easy for NBC or ABC to come out here and take a picture of a wino sitting in an alley. I could do the same thing. I can go to Baltimore. I can go to the slums there and do a news story and portray this as what is a typical daily scene of the city of Baltimore as an example of what Baltimore is all about. There are many programs now in the high schools. I mean, we have our own Students Against Drunk Driving that march every year. We have the fastest growing colleges in the United States, Oglala Lakota College, Sintiqueleska College in Rosebud, the fastest growing Indian colleges in the United States. I mean, fastest growing colleges even of any race that are incorporating traditional programs to solve our internal problems, drug and alcohol. We're solving our own problem, but it's not a news story. It's not a news story, but it's happening.
You're listening to the Public Affairs program, Like It Is. Today, a rebroadcast of my interview with Tim Gallego, one of the founders of the Lakota Times. It was the first independently owned Native American newspaper in the United States.
In a speech at Stanford University, Tim, you mentioned the media blitz surrounding the 500th birthday of Columbus. How do you feel about that celebration?
Well, to me, it's really nothing. You know, to most Indians, you know, it's zero. You know, we've even stopped talking about it because what it's done for a lot of us that are in this profession is it's afforded us an opportunity to have a wider forum to talk about our problems, simply because the white media is now coming to us and saying, well, what do you think about Columbus now? Well, we're not going to talk about that. You know, it happened 500 years ago. It was a disaster to our people. It was the beginning of genocide against us. Let's turn that around and use it for something that we can help educate America as to what actually happened, and let's use it to start telling about the problems as they exist right now in the year 1992, 500 years later, and what can we do to solve our problems for the people that are living now, not those that have been that have died through genocidal means over the last 500 years. One of the things that's happening in Indian country right now, and I watched the report on NBC News by Tom Brokaw, and Tom is from South Dakota. He reads my newspaper every single week, and thank God he's become sensitized and educated to our problems because the newscast is one of the best I've ever seen, and that was on Indian gaming. Now, here's a small example. Here are the Indian tribes that have found a small window of opportunity to help themselves become financially independent. They built casinos on their sovereign lands. White people are flocking to these casinos and spending their money. The tribes are in turn taking their money, they're putting it into higher educational facilities, they're building homes for the elderly, they're building health clinics, they're putting together insurance plans and profit-sharing plans and retirement plans. They're building other businesses through the proceeds, gas stations, supermarkets. You know, these are some positive things that are happening because of the proceeds that we're pulling in from bingo and gaming operations. The federal government is coming down on the Indian tribes and trying to prevent us from doing this. I mean, here we are standing up saying now we have the freedom to do these things, and the government's trying to stop us. The two states that are screaming the loudest about Indian gaming are Nevada and New Jersey, two of the states that are involved in gambling and have the most to lose. So we fight all of our lives for the last 200-300 years to become self-sufficient, and when we find that small window of opportunity, the federal government stops in and tries to close it in collusion with the states. So how in the hell do we win? I mean, what do we have to do? We've got to get the people of America behind us.
You said earlier that Americans shouldn't assume that everyone wants to be included into American culture or society, that American Indians just want to be left to their own culture. How do we get that point across? We've talked for nearly half an hour, and I get the impression that we still don't have a viable mechanism to get that message across. How do we get that message across, Tim?
Well, I guess the only way to get it across is because America seems to have this phobia that if a person doesn't want to become immersed in the great melting pot, become totally American, then that person is somehow un-American. Well, we were here long before there was an America. We had our own lands. We had our own governments. We had our own treaties that we signed with the United States government that proclaimed within the treaties that we were sovereign nations. The Sixth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution mentions Indian tribes as independent nations. So we're the only minority mentioned in that capacity in the U.S. Constitution. People have to understand that we're not trying to be un-American. The point I make here is, per capita, more Indians volunteered to fight in every war that America has been in than any other minority. As per capita, American Indians are more decorated for valor than any other race. And these are facts. So we've stood up and we've gone to war and we fought for our country, even when we weren't even citizens of the United States. Those Indians that fought in World War I were not citizens. We didn't become citizens by a congressional act until 1924, but two states didn't ratify that act. They were Arizona and New Mexico. So all of those tribes in Arizona and New Mexico who sent young men to die, like Ira Hayes, who raised the flag at Iwo Jima, the Navajo Code Talkers, they weren't even citizens of the United States during World War II. So our patriotism cannot be questioned. All we're saying is we have our own language, we have our own culture, we have our own spirituality. We can become a great part of America by being our own independent nations. That doesn't make us your enemies. We would be a part of the major overall country, but just let us have our freedom and our independence as we have always had it. I don't know why that's so hard to understand.
Do you feel bitterness toward America historically for the way in which it has treated Native Americans?
No, I feel no bitterness, you know, because I think we're changing things now. I think there's so many people that have come along now. You know, I can name someone from almost every major tribe in the United States that is standing up to try to make things better, try to correct some of the wrongs. And I think you can also find on the other side of the spectrum good people that are like Paul Simon, the senator from Illinois, Tom Daschle from South Dakota, Dennis DeCrescini from Arizona. I mean, you can find a lot of people on the other side that are sitting down and listening to us and saying, yes, they're right. We need to change a lot of things, but change a lot of our attitudes. We need to incorporate some legislation that is truly going to give Indian people independence. So you can't be bitter, because you have to take everything that happened in the past and use it to make things better for the future. And that's the way I look at it.
Do you, down the road, see more of a coming together of African Americans and Native Americans?
I think I see a coming together of almost all minorities. I think the Hispanics, who in themselves, you know, people call a lot of the Mexicans and the other that have come up through South America, they call them different races, but in essence, they're Indians. I mean, their ancestors didn't come over on the Mayflower. They were Native Americans. So I see, and there are a lot of African Americans who came over here on slave ships that escaped from their masters and became a part of Indian communities. The Indians took them in, and they became a part of the tribes. So we have a lot of that has happened in the past. In fact, I have many, many bike friends who I have sat down and talked to that have told me, you know, part of my ancestral roots go back to the American Indians. So we have a lot in common, and I think as minorities, we're all going to have to sort of stand together, because one of these years, we're going to be the majority.
On that note, we'll close this edition of Like It Is. My guest today has been Tim Gallego, editor and publisher of the Lakota Times, the largest privately owned Indian weekly newspaper in the United States. Tim joined me today via telephone from Rapid City, South Dakota. Thanks, Tim.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to the Public Affairs Program, Like It Is. Today, a rebroadcast of my interview with Tim Gallego, one of the founders of the Lakota Times. It was the first independently owned Native American newspaper in the United States. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.